Welcome to Invictus Games Radio. I'm PJ Kwong. The Invictus Games Toronto 2017 take place September 23rd to 30th and will harness the power of sport to inspire the recovery of wounded, ill, and injured servicemen and women. This podcast shines a light on the stories of those competing in the games and those surrounding them. Their spirit is unconquered. On today's episode, I'm talking to Major Retired Jay Faco. His is an interesting story, which started with his active service. He was sidelined temporarily with an injury while in Afghanistan, continued with the search to access services, and has resulted in his current position as senior manager at Soldier On, a program dedicated to offering sports and other activities for current and veteran Canadian soldiers. The Canadian Forces Soldier On is making huge differences in soldiers' lives. For more information, visit their website, soldieron.ca, and I am thrilled to be speaking with Jay Faco. Thank you for talking to me.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
Okay, so here's my first question. I want to go back to little Jay. I want to know, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, that's a tough one, and it's funny because my two boys now had the same answer when I just asked them what they wanted to be, was a teacher. Was like a gym teacher, was what I always kind of wanted to be.
Okay, so when did you turn the corner and head into the military, and how did that happen?
It happened kind of following my brother's footsteps. We were living up in Parry Sound, just finishing off high school, and I was going to start the university process, and I didn't know what exactly I wanted to take in university or if I still wanted to be a teacher. So I ended up doing 1 year of university, and I was taking environmental science. I had a great year. I mm-hmm. went to Trent University in Peterborough.
I had a great school for that, actually.
Yeah, it was wonderful. But then I was spending a lot of money, and I wasn't sure if that was the degree I wanted to get or where my life was going to lead. And I had an older brother, who 3 years older, who joined the military. And he was making a great life, like playing lots of sports and seeing the world and really physically and spending time outdoors and everything like that. So I said, you know what, for 3 years, why not just try it out? And you know, after 3 years, I can always just get out and go back to school. And
so that's the initial commitment, was 3 years at the time
you joined?
3 years.
The three years at the time was the initial contract.
And did you get a chance to choose what branch of the military? How does that happen?
I did. You go in the recruiting office and okay. you do some testing and some questionnaires, and they offer you what's available at the time, so which trades are hiring, and then you get to choose. I was pretty determined I was going to follow his footsteps and go in the infantry anyway, so that's what I did. I picked a different regiment.
And did they, were there any other options? Did the people who tested you, did they say you would be better served in the Navy or...?
No, they weren't. They didn't try to sway me any way. Infantry was. They were needing some individuals to go there. So they said, as soon as I said infantry, they're like, "Okay,
you're in."
You're in, and I was happy because that was my first selection all along. Right?
And I've always wondered. So you said you were in a different regiment. Did you get a choice? Like, do you get to choose a regiment?
I did get to choose. They asked me if I wanted to go out west with the Princess Patricia Light Infantry or stay in Ontario with the Royal Canadian Regiment. And being from Ontario, and my parents were close in there in Peterborough at the time, so I said, I'll stay in Ontario and, you know, stay close. And so after all that basic training and all that, I was shipped to Petawawa, and it was nice because on some weekends I could just hop in the car and go home and visit my folks. So it was great that way.
Well, I think of your story when I was doing research for this interview as one of transitions. So tell me about the transition from civilian life to military life. Were you always a disciplined person? Like, what is that process like?
It's an interesting transition, and you know it comes at you full force.
So I bet.
After I was told, okay, you're in. Here's your starting date. Okay, here's your plane ticket. You're going to Cornwallis. I was the last course to go through CFB Cornwallis at the time.
Okay.
As soon as you get off that bus in Cornwallis, they're in your face and they're exposing you to the military culture, and you know, it doesn't seem like you can do anything right for the first little while, right? And you're just like, oh wow, what did I get myself into? But it was fine, and you know, after a while you start getting some rewards for, you know, making your bed right and doing your drill and saluting properly, and the whole military culture is what they're trying to breed into you at that time and just give you a kind of a touch of it. I did have one eye-opening situation during basic training when it was the last week, and they said, okay, everybody that's all the other trades like vehicle tech and aero techs and stuff, you guys go over there. All the infantry guys, you come over here. So we all went over to
one. And how many were you in that group?
There must have been 15, 16 of us.
Okay. So not a huge group.
Not a huge group.
So you knew them all.
We did know, and I ended up going to the next phase with those individuals. But they said, okay, you guys really, you've done, and not talking to us, I'm talking to the other groups, and he says, you've really done the hardest, probably the hardest thing that you'll do in your military career, from training-wise, up front. Infantry, you haven't seen anything yet.
Oh, really?
Get ready for battle school, because that's the next phase.
Wow.
When you go into a 16-week course through battle school, and that's how I went to Petawawa and conducted that. So I learned a lot in Petawawa.
Yep.
Doing the infantry, really being... I learned a little bit in Cornwallis, but I think I learned a lot more during battle school and what a soldier's like.
I know there's a rationale in the training. What is it exactly? So why is it that they're in your face? Like what there is, it's for the greater good. I understand that there's a positive thing, but what is the, is it to make sure that people just can respond as one, like as a unit, or what?
I think
what is the goal?
I think there's a little bit of that. It really promotes teamwork and helping each other out. It promotes that discipline aspect, and you know, when you're in the face of the enemy, you have to make sure that you're still you still have that discipline, and it carries on into what you're doing in field craft in the field, and it carries on for various aspects of, like, is even writing briefing notes up to higher leadership. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that discipline to make sure that you're doing it and you get the task done to the standard, the highest standard that you possibly can.
So the biggest lesson that you learned in basic training was what?
In basic
life training. What was your biggest life lesson, do you think?
In basic training? That's a tough one. It's going back a long ways. But just serving the country, and you know, at the end of it, you're proud to wear the uniform that you've just learned how to press and
put properly
on, press properly and shine your shoes and that stuff. But life lesson is just how proud that feeling can be, and it must be a lot like international sports when you don that hockey jersey or is it at the
anything
Olympics,
sure,
the Paralympics. It's a feeling that is fantastic. That,
so you moved on to battle school, another 16 weeks. It's going to sound like a dumb question, and I'm sorry for it, but if you get to battle school to that phase, does everybody get through it, or are there people that drop off? Like,
no, there's people that drop off.
Okay.
Yeah, there's people that, for whatever, they just say, this isn't for me.
Okay.
I need to, and either they get released from the forces, or they go to a different trade and something more suitable for them, or they get injured, and they just get back to the next course, so they're just... They get put in holding, which almost happened to me in battle school, and then
and
then you carry on your training later on.
You were injured?
I was injured. Yes, I was at I was doing a training exercise out in Petawawa in the training area, and the section commander at the time told us to kind of jump over these wooden structures, their observation posts that were out there. I grabbed onto the top of it, and it was sheet metal on top, and it just came flying back. I came flying back, and there was actually a 6-foot picket sticking out of the ground, and I impaled my calf muscle onto the 6-foot picket, and it turns out I was wearing a radio at the time, so I just kind of fell backwards, and there I was. I kept through it, and they said, as long as you can do a certain task, it was just it worked out in that part of the schedule. If you can do a certain task without crutches, you can carry on with the course. So I did everything I could to to recover, to recover quickly. I still did all the lessons, and sure. I was just on crutches and trying to keep up and stuff like that. But.
Do you know, it's so interesting because you ended up with an injury when you were in Afghanistan and that caused you to lose the vision in your right eye. But going back to that calf injury, because it's the same question regardless of the injury. Mm-hmm. So think back to that time when you've got a pole sticking out of your calf.
Yeah.
Tell me about shock. Tell me about what it feels like. Can you appreciate the fact that, you know, you have just really severely injured your calf? Like what I've heard from other military people is that they're able to compartmentalize sort of what's happening in order to make sure everything else gets taken care of. So tell me about that day.
Well, what I remember when I fell back is that everybody rushed off and pulled me off the picket. But you know, the hardest thing about that wasn't the injury itself. You know, I went into shock, but the section commanders that were on the ground were great with their mm-hmm. first aid and patching me up, and there's a vehicle there to get me to the hospital right away. But it's that unknown, and I think that's a common challenge for all ill and injured members, is what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably the scariest part about it. Am I going to get recoursed? Are they going to? Because I wanted to stay with all my friends that
sure.
I went through basic training and most of battle school with and carry on. So it was, I think that was the best. The shock piece was, you know, okay, I'm in good hands. They're going to take good care of me. The biggest one was instantly was what's going to happen?
Okay.
Where's this going to lead? My career and all that stuff. Is it, how bad is the injury? And you know, you never know. It was a rusty old 6-foot baby.
Goodness.
You never know what's going to happen, right?
Your poor mother. I'm just saying that now.
No, I know. And there's more to it. Yeah.
I have heard often soldiers and veterans talk about sort of that brothers in arms kind of feeling, that mm-hmm. idea of the brotherhood, the camaraderie. Can you talk a little bit, as you're going through these courses, what is that like? What is that feeling? Can you describe it for me?
I don't. There isn't a stronger bond, I think, within the military than having that esprit de corps mm-hmm. or that camaraderie. It's at the end of the day, if you build an effective team, they're not necessarily there for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They're there to help their brothers and sisters get through it. And, you know, if they get hurt or something, you know, they feel bad because they feel that they let down their team.
Mm-hmm.
A lot like a hockey team or
sure,
what have
a team
you.
If
you get
kind.
Injured.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, that esprit de corps, it's hard to define, especially when you're overseas,
mm-hmm.
is because everybody's in the same boat. Everybody's taken away from their families. Everybody's missing home, and everybody's in a war-torn country in danger. You know, when rocket attacks come, well, everybody's affected, and everybody has to react to it. And, you know, it's that bond that you're not alone when you do it, and mm-hmm. it's pretty strong. They do emphasize that during our training as well, when you're working with these small teams and your section and making sure that everybody has a job to do and make sure you do
yeah.
it, but that bond and, you know, and that there's an instant kind of humor and everything else that goes along with being on that team, for sure.
They talk about gallows humor a little bit, that sometimes the humor can be a little bit dark, but you still have to laugh.
It can be, too. Mm-hmm. It can be. And when I was injured in Afghanistan, it was a very serious incident. We lost, unfortunately lost. But when we were leaning up against the car tire, like, one of the guys just like, hey, I guess I can't go to the gym tomorrow. Like, just,
yeah.
you know, it wasn't out of context, but
no.
you're just like, oh, yeah.
Well, you yeah. know, and it's funny because when I was looking into it, you were with, and correct me when I get the terms wrong,
sure.
but with Roto Zero.
Roto Zero, yes.
And we went all the way to Roto 10,
yes.
I think, and that was 8 years later. You were there in 2004. Was that your first trip to Afghanistan in 2004?
To Afghanistan. We actually deployed in 2003.
Okay.
Yeah, in the summer of 2003, and I was injured in 2004.
Okay, that's
a week before I was supposed to come back and finish the tour.
And then there were 615 injuries to Canadian soldiers in between 2004, in between your time when you were injured and the last tour that went through. That's a lot of people, and I know that from looking at your story, that one of the things that happened for you was that when you, let's back up. Let's talk about, so we're talking about the gallows humor. You're in Afghanistan, so it was a week before you were coming home that this happened?
That's right. Yeah.
And you guys always, men and women, just use the generic term guys, but yeah. When you're out there, you're obviously got your eyes peeled for what's going on, for things that are happening, and yet things happen. So you're injured by shrapnel, lose the sight in your right eye. You were brought home fairly quickly, as I understand.
I spent a week in Germany. So after the incident, I went to the Royal 3 Hospital in Kabul. They did some assessments, and they were really concerned about the shrapnel in my eye. So
yes.
What they did is they knocked me out so I wouldn't move my eye.
Yep.
And then they transported me to Germany, where they have the best in the world facility. It was a Bonn University, to take the shrapnel from behind my eye, mm-hmm. and get it out. And they also, you know, work on all the other injuries,
sure.
that I had, not just my eye. So I spent a week in Germany under their care. It was kind of humorous when I woke up and I kind of knew what happened, but nobody was speaking English. I had no clothes, no ID. I'm like, where am I? But luckily, we have a Canadian Forces team that was,
yes.
in Europe, and they were. But 5 minutes later,
they were there.
They were there to tell me and make sure that I was okay, and I was tracking everything that's going
Worth
on.
With the bratwurst, right?
That's right. Yeah. Well, I found out too that they don't have big lunches. You know, it was ham and cheese for breakfast and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And then was your family notified fairly quickly that you'd been injured?
They were notified right away.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. My mom and dad. And they actually flew my mom and dad over to...
To Germany.
Yeah.
You know what's so interesting about all of this? When I spoke with Colonel Rakesh Jetley,
right.
One of the things he said, because for those of us who are civilians, you imagine if something devastating happens. I want to say... Oh, and I wrote it down. I'm sorry. Jamie Murphy lost his life that day, right?
He did, yes.
So, but what Colonel Jetley explained to me is that sometimes soldiers are so busy securing the area, making sure that all of the details that you were talking about before, the discipline, all those things are looked after, that often the realization of what the trauma was, the incident was, doesn't happen until later. Did you find that? Did you experience that as well?
Not personally, I kind of did experience that, but I knew what was going on with the situation.
In the moment,
and I can remember it because I stayed conscious through the whole thing.
Wow.
What, where we were in the vehicle and exactly what happened and where Corporal Jamie Murphy was sitting and everything. I remember all that. For myself personally, I didn't really know the extent of my injuries.
Sure.
I was, my main concern was making sure that we were okay, and you're right, making sure the area is secure, because you know, you never know if there's another attack
or
what else going on. There was a vehicle we always travel. We got traveled in two vehicles, so the first vehicle had some shrapnel marks on it, but the occupants of the vehicle were okay to help secure that aspect of it, while the other severely wounded were there trying to make it out, sort of thing.
Of course.
Right?
So is it the training that kicks in, and you just kind of go sort of on automatic pilot a little bit?
It is training, but it's, you know, you can't replicate what's happening, mm-hmm. exactly on the ground and the circumstances but everybody knows their role and where they need to be.
It's
and
clearly defined.
It was pretty clearly defined, and I wasn't that far from the camp, so it wasn't that much time before our quick reaction force was on the ground securing the area, and we were on a main route, so we flagged down some vehicles that were coming through that were ours, so to all help out, and the team just comes together and does that. Right?
You know, it's so interesting from a civilian perspective to imagine, you know, the Canadian Armed Forces has how many thousands of people, mm-hmm. and yet in the moment, things can still get done very quickly. So yeah. You arrive home, you're in Germany, you come back, to Canada.
And I spent a week in the General Hospital here in Ottawa.
Okay.
Under the Eye Institute, which was also a great thing that they flew over one of their surgeons to Germany to talk to the German surgeons who were, and then accompanied me back, and they sent the Challenger over to get me back, which was
wow.
great. Yeah, great food. It was fantastic.
Always comes back to the food, Jay. I'm not sure why.
I was hungry there. Yeah. No. So I got back and I spent a week in Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then the staff at General Hospital was just fantastic, and because I had to go through multiple operations for all my wounds at that point, there's multiple disciplines that were looking at me, and the Eye Institute, one of the best. My surgeons
anywhere.
In the world.
Yeah.
Dr. Leonard was working on my eye. It was fantastic.
So you get back home, and I'm fascinated because we're going to find out how you got here to soldier on. I want to find out about the services. You were your own investigative reporter trying to figure out how to access services. What were you looking for?
Well, this is dating way back because I was one of the first. There was injuries from Op Apollo in 2002, but I was one of the first
yes.
injured from Afghanistan. So a lot of the services that are here now today did not exist at that time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a challenge what I was trying to do, like just from compensation for getting to medical appointments, what's going to happen to me career-wise when medically and both from professionally.
Yes.
Point of
You've
view.
You've got lots of time invested by this point, eh?
Right. And I'm almost at like, I've got the 10 years kind of invested in, and I'm really, you know, I was loaded on some really high quality courses that I was really excited about, but all of a sudden, I'm not doing it. And
yeah.
that's unknown again. Eh? Yeah. So it was a lot of asking questions, and now that we've been through Afghanistan and more ill and injured have gone through, they've really developed the programming and mm-hmm. how to care for our own soldiers. But at the beginning, it was difficult. Like, we have life insurance, and how's all that, and how's Veteran Affairs fit in, and making all these phone calls and trying to put it all together was difficult. But I did know at the time, and I was lucky because I accepted what happened quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And the repercussions that had, the impact that had. And you know what, if I couldn't get loaded on one of those courses again, okay, you know what, I have to move on. And I always said to myself, I said it in articles, is try to be the same person I was before injury, after injury.
Mm-hmm.
And that came to a kind of a front, because I was only like a month back, and the battalion was having a fun little hockey game at the rink. I said, you know what, I gotta go. And luckily and my boss was on the ice, and he just said, you know, just make sure you don't run into him, because that was tough.
Yeah,
like playing hockey with now one eye.
Yep.
and trying to figure that out. But
and depth perception would be difficult.
Depth perception, and then I also had a torn knee and ankle and shrapnel all the right side of my body. So it probably took a couple weeks back into my physical recovery,
mm-hmm.
but mentally, it did wonders for me personally. And you know, that it was a fantastic use of sport. Saying, hey, you know what, you know, I'm not going to be the same hockey player. I wasn't going to make the NHL anyways.
Are you sure?
Well, you know, some people
come on
still,
now.
Some people out there still think so, but
yeah,
it was great for me. And it's just, you know what, I can still do this. I just have to accept that maybe I'll miss a backhand pass or
yep.
I'll bump into more people in the rink, but now I have an excuse.
I like it.
Yeah, no. So it was fantastic. And the interesting is, and again, my brother plays a lot into this because he was also injured military, and he lost his air in a jump in the late 90s, and he broke his legs and crushed ankle and compressed vertebrae and dislocated pelvis, and doctor said he'd never walk again. Well, he went on to become a golf pro. He's actually
wow.
he's actually a coach on it for Invictus Games now, as an injured member and a golf pro, and then he did 10 Ironman Canadas.
Holy cow!
Just incredible. And I was just like, wow, you know, physically, he has more pain than
than I had. So I did again look at him and say, you know what, yeah.
If my big brother can do it, I could do it.
Yeah, I can't let him outdo me.
Of course not. But you know what's so interesting? What lesson do you think that your parents gave you that have made you and your brother both so tenacious?
I don't know if they instilled that never give up kind of attitude, and you know, and to always go out and really try your best, mm-hmm. and never give up is really what it comes down to. You know, they always let us. We're two boys. They let us be boys all the time, and it probably helped with our competitiveness and that aspect of it. And we always grew up playing lots of sports, and so I think that has a lot to do with. And I can't overemphasize the impact that sports can have, or just physical recreation, physical activity can have in somebody's recovery. It did wonders for me, and this is before Soldier On or any of these programs existed. And my brother was well before, even before me, so.
Well, there are two things that struck me. One was the scuba diving that happened. Is that just this past fall? A Soldier On scuba diving program?
We've done a few scuba diving across. We did one out in Comox, BC, and then we did another one out on the East Coast as well. So we've done lots of scuba diving stuff, and, you know, it's anything to, in the use of sport. And you know, the stories that really touch me are the ones that there's people struggling in their house just to get out.
Yeah.
Just, it doesn't matter if it's a physical injury or a mental health injury or illness. It's those people that take that first step and get out. And that's where Soldier On now, as a program, can come in and help. You know, the first thing they have to do is say, yes, I need some support.
Yes.
Once they say that, you know, we'll help you along the way, and Soldier On's been fantastic, and it was a great fit for me to move into the position. Having gone through what I've gone through, I would never say that I can exactly relate to the challenges of everybody.
Sure.
But I do have a good idea, going through it myself and having family members go through it, that what people are going through, and some of the things that work for me may work for somebody else. They might not work for somebody else, but I'm happy to share those. And it's you know, just getting out there and trying to be, it's acceptance of your limitations and then adapting to the new normal. Everybody always says a full recovery. I don't believe that people, and this is Jay Faco, I don't think anybody fully recovers completely.
Yeah,
you know, it's finding that new normal and figuring out how to make the best out of it. And as soon as you accept that there's going to be a new normal, you're halfway there.
You know, Soldier On has been in existence since 2007, I believe. Yeah. So it's in its 10-year anniversary.
Yes.
Whose brainchild was it? And how did it come to be?
Well, it's Greg Legacy, who you met, was one of the founding members of it, and he was working with the Paralympic Committee, and he's looking at the Paralympic movement is based off of World War II at Stoke Mandeville, and the whole birth of using sport as a type of rehabilitation, which now we know as the Paralympics, like that's a huge sporting event. He was working for the Paralympic, and he said, you know, the stuff that we do, he's come from a military family, so he had some background, and he pitched the idea. And then there was another member from the Canadian Forces, Andrew McLean, who kind of jumped on and said, you know what, let's kind of do this. And you know, they're both two had really big parts in making Soldier On what it is, and they got into, or Greg got in to see Rick Hillier, who was the chief of defense staff at the time, and he said, yeah, okay, let's bring it on, and it was adopted by the Canadian Forces in 2007. So it's not a new concept.
No.
But it's been renewed, and it's been renewed across the world, which is fantastic.
So give me two examples of stories or moments that make you feel proud to be associated with Soldier On.
Well, I would use the first one, and I know I like to default, and he's a member of the Invictus Games, is a Sergeant Retired Steve Daniel, who I know from back in my battalion days, and before his injury. We soldiered together in the 3rd Battalion, the Royal Canadian Regiment. He was a fantastic individual, right? And then he got hurt, paralyzed, yep, in a parachute jump in Trenton. And this, his story as the first soldier on participant, and when he'll tell the story a little bit better than I can, but you know, he was brought to Comox on Mount Washington to do a sit skiing thing, and I remember telling the story about, you know, he got to the top of the mountain,
and he's in a wheelchair. People need to know
he is. Yeah, he's at the top of the mountain and he's in a sit ski for the first time. And he's looking up, he's like, okay, what have I got myself into? Because it's pretty steep, right? It's a mountain.
It's death-defying, people.
Right, it is. So, and he says, like, oh, I guess there's only one way to get down off this thing. And he said the feeling of the air and going down. And Steve has been an inspiration to so many people. I met up with him again at a Soldier On event in 2010. And the incredible person that he is, he would take time to go, if he saw a younger child in a wheelchair, he would go over there and he'd talk to him for 45 minutes about stuff. And so after that Comox, he got inspired to get into sport, wheelchair basketball, and started doing some rowing and stuff. And then the Canadian Rowing picked him up, and he was in the Paralympics in Beijing.
Yep.
For rowing. And this is shortly, as a couple, 2 or 3 years after his injury, which is just incredible. And he came back, and you know, that didn't even stop him. He was motivated, and that confidence was built up that, you know, he went to med school, and he just finished med school. He's in his residency right now, and to go from sergeant to everything he's gone through, and now he's Dr. Daniels, which is incredible.
Yeah.
You know, a story like that, that's not the Soldier On standard by any means, because it's a pretty high standard, but it's just incredible how he used sport and to build that confidence and to see him do great things, and he's continuing to do great things. And that's why, like, he's one of the mentors on the team. Mm-hmm. Just to bring that leadership from a guy who's been there and done that to help the rest of the team out. Yeah, he's a fantastic individual.
The stories that you talk about, and I've heard them as well from people who are just in their basement, they're completely immobilized, not able to do anything. Yeah. When they accept that they need some support, what happens to them then? So if I'm that person in my basement and I'm an ill or injured retired service or active service person, right, and I say, you know what, I don't want to live like this anymore. I need help.
Well,
what happens?
There's lots of services out there that can help through Veteran Affairs, through the Joint Personnel Support Unit, and through Soldier On. And that person just needs to email us, pick up the phone, Facebook message us. However you want to, that person wants to do it, is to contact us, and then we can, what we've done is set up a kind of registration and what we offer in terms of sport. And to get that person active for the rest of their lives and help them along the way.
Mm-hmm.
We have a great story of Whistler. We run an Allied Winter Sports Camp every year in Whistler. We invite ill or injured members from the UK, Australia, and the US and Canada. And we do multiple sport, zip lining, sledge hockey, dog sled, alpine skiing, Nordic skiing.
Wow.
We've done some curling in the past and such. And this, we had this one individual that's his first time. He put up his hand, you know, he came and the camaraderie, the instant camaraderie that happens at one of these events is from the first supper when everybody meets. They have a few things in common, is they've all served their country regardless of, they could have even, some of them even shared space on the battlefield, mm-hmm, in Afghanistan, for an example. And they've all been through something dramatic and very life changing, altering. Mm-hmm. So they bring those two and they have an instant bond, and you don't get that humor right away and
sure,
stuff like that. It was funny because this one guy, and some of the guys needed some supplies at Walmart, and the Australians, they love Walmart because they don't have them down there. They're like, I gotta go to a Walmart. And I'm like, okay. But the closest
Australians need to get a life.
The only Walmart closest to Whistler is Squamish.
Okay.
So we went back down to Squamish, and he got out of the van and he's walking in and he's like, no, nobody tell my wife this, I haven't left the house in 2 years.
Oh.
I wouldn't go for dinner with my wife. I wouldn't go to the shopping mall with my wife. But when he got into that group, he felt secure,
mm-hmm.
kind of remembering old times, and that what we talked about, that esprit de corps aspect of it. And you know what we try to do with Soldier On, and what I say at every camp is, nobody's alone. When you're in your basement, and you know when you're injured, all those unknowns, and I've been through it too. I think nobody understands me.
Mm-hmm.
No, like I'm in this by myself. I gotta go do that. And that sometimes when I was calling around trying to find what service it was like that. But what I emphasize and say, listen, you're not alone, because there's people all over the world. And Invictus Games will be a fantastic showcase of this, is there's people all over the world with similar challenges. And we always double occupy people, so we put people in the room together.
Oh,
they start talking, and they're like,
great.
Oh, I can't sleep. Well, I can't. Did you try doing this? Or this is how, you know? And it's incredible how much common. Doesn't matter if you're in Australia. Doesn't matter if you're an Afghan vet. It doesn't matter, you go through the similar challenges. And I also emphasize that you're not alone, because there's Canadians that care.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you don't have to do this all by yourself. There's lots of programs like Soldier On, you know, there's the Invictus Games, there's True Patriot Love, there's all these organizations that are out there that want to help you. So it's emphasizing to them that, you know what, now that you put your hand up, you're not alone. That's the hardest thing, is putting your hand up. The rest of it, you have support to do it, as long as you're willing to do it.
You know, it's so interesting. You talk about the support, and I think that there are lots of Canadians out there who would like to show their support. So if somebody, general public person, what kinds of things can they do to support somebody who's struggling? Military person who's struggling.
Well, there's lots of programs like Soldier On where
you can
donate to Soldier On, and you know, that's how we deliver our kind of mandate to get people active again.
Mm-hmm.
So we're set up. We use the donated money or sponsorship to run these camps. We run 50 camps a year, and it doesn't matter if it's
50.
Wow. We're up to 50 camps a year, and it has anything to do with sport or physical recreation. We cover it all. We've gone out to the actual Illinois population and asked, what sports are you guys interested in? Instead of, you know, Jay Faco trying to say, hey, well, we like this.
Everybody,
we're doing this,
do
but
this.
Nobody shows up, right? So we went out, and you know, it's the sports like kayaking, golf, hiking, fly fishing, that people can just escape when they need it, or go take a break and go do that sport, that are really popular. So what we do is to take that donated money and turning into a very tangible product and deliver it through these camps to ill and injured members. And it's great, because we're a unique charity, because the government also pays into it and covers all the administration overhead and salaries to make it happen. So the donated money goes directly to what we're trying to do, which is very unique. And
absolutely.
In a situation. And we're also, so the camp is one piece, and that's mm-hmm. meant to inspire and motivate and you know, that you're not alone aspect of it and build that. But when they come back, they say, you know what, Soldier On, I really like skiing, but it's expensive, and I can't do it all the time. I said, well, we have a grant program, so they can apply for a grant. Again, we take that donated money.
Wow.
And we'll offset the costs associated with skiing.
Mm-hmm.
And the main intent, the main effort of Soldier On, and I emphasize this all the time, is active for the rest of your life. It's not just a one trip thing. We're meant to, how do we set you up for the rest of your life? Day after day, you keep on doing this, you know, and we've got, like, social media is a great tool for that now. Getting people inspired. We set up a golf troop, for example. People like golf, they get up there, hey, anybody want to do 18 holes this? And it's only ill and injured members that are on this
mm-hmm.
social media. And they're like, yeah, I would love to. You know, and then they go and they play golf. And that's what it's about, is that lifetime of sport.
Not and sociability.
Exactly. Exactly. Because, which brings other things along
yeah.
with it. Absolutely. But it's the sport. And it's not rocket science what Soldier On's trying to do. Like, we're putting on sports programs. but in the long run, it's doing wonders for both physically and mentally for all ill and injured. Remember, I would say you don't even have to be ill and injured to appreciate what sport can bring
you
to
bet.
The table.
Man. You know what? You probably don't know this. Either on our Twitter feed or Facebook feed, somebody wrote saying that they were looking forward to trying golf because they were really looking forward to going to the clubhouse afterwards, and that would be a huge step in the right direction for them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know what? It touches my heart.
Yeah.
Because for some people, it's not about swinging the club and hitting the ball. It's about overcoming the apprehension of being with other people.
Exactly. And going back to that Allied Winter Sports Camp that we run, we actually throw in at near the end of the programming, so people build that confidence, they breed that esprit, we actually built in a pre-ski. And a lot of, they don't like, a lot of ill and injured, especially mental health, ill and injured don't like crowds.
Yeah.
Right? So you're bringing them to like downtown Village of Whistler into a crowded, and you know, we have to give them some poutine, so.
Of course.
Hey, welcome to Canada. You have to have some of that. So
they, Walmart they, and poutine.
What else?
It's a very highbrow list.
Yeah. But we go in and you know, a lot of them are like, you know, this is, I can do this. And we never put any pressure on anybody. If they need a breather, then okay. They just tell one of the staff and say, okay, no problem whatsoever. You need a ride back to the rooms, what's
how
going on?
Help?
You just want to sit back, you want to talk? All good. Yeah, so there's lots of, so going back, I forget what my train of thought there, sorry.
Yeah. That's okay. We're just talking about the sociability, that's
right.
The hard part for lots of people.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Do you find that... one of the questions that I've been asked, and I want to pose it to you, with the Invictus Games Toronto 2017 coming September 23rd to 30th, look at me figuring that out.
Yeah.
Does the competition aspect, does that add pressure or does that add motivation, do you think?
Personally, I think it adds pressure.
Okay.
It added pressure. And what we've told our team is not about medals. It's about the journey. It's about going from where you are now, training hard, and as hard as you can, to do your personal best and be the best kind of athlete that you can. It doesn't matter if you get a gold or a silver. It's about being there and being in that atmosphere, which is going to be wonders for your recovery. So I think it adds a little bit of pressure. And for some people will handle that well. And they'll say, oh, I really want to get a gold, and that's what I'm going to strive for. Great. Some people are just trying to do their personal best going there, and that's great, just as great as getting a medal, I find.
Because that is one of the things that people talk about. There are lots of people who find a goal particularly motivating, a goal like a gold medal or whatever. And for other people, I didn't get the gold, so I'm not good enough, is what can happen in other sport that isn't, this kind of arena.
Right, and we're emphasizing just to make sure that they use the Invictus Games as a kind of a stepping stone in their life. It's not the end of the games. Oh, I didn't medal. Now I'll go back to my basement. That's not the intent. It's to grow into the love of a sport and carry on doing something. It doesn't have to be that sport, it could be another sport, but carry on doing something, becoming active, and still adapting to your new normal as much as possible. And you know, the last thing we want to do is say, okay, that's over, I'm done, I'm not going to ride that bike again or what have you. It's like, I encourage people to keep on doing it. And you know, I've seen it from previous Invictus Games that they're still connected.
Mm-hmm.
They're still connected to the team. There's bonds there that, just like when I'm in Afghanistan with my platoon, they're still there with talking. You know, somebody's having a bad day, they're there to support each other. And I can't overemphasize, like, the peer support that people get is fantastic. And I never really... When I came back from my injury, from a personal point of view, I wasn't really comfortable until the all the troops came back and all my friends came back and I could actually talk to them. I was tired of talking to psychiatrists and social workers and, you know. But when I had sat down and maybe I had a beer and just talked to some of my peers that were there, and you know, it was really good. And they were only listening when I wanted to talk, and if I didn't want to talk about it, they were fine with that too. So, you know,
peer support is a huge, huge thing,
and it's been a huge enabler for Soldier On. Like we find mm-hmm. people come back, and after a camp, I'll just say, okay, now I challenge everybody that experienced a Soldier On event to go and find one of your friends that could use this experience in their recovery. And that's what the hope for the Invictus Games, when all these people go through it. Well, go back and like be ambassador now
yeah.
for the use of sport and what that can do, and go help other people. Because that's spread, that kind of ripple effect. And mm-hmm. social media is great for that too. Like it just spreads across. And I've seen people knock on doors and just say, hey, I need to talk to you. And you know, I did a Soldier On fly fishing thing. It was great. And they taught us how to learn ties. And I was out there. It was so peaceful and quiet. And it was no pressure. You know, I needed to have a little time out. So they just, you know, no pressure whatsoever. And I recommend that you go do that. And that's, we've had a lot of people come to the program that way. And that's fantastic.
So are people members of Soldier On? Are they, what is this, that kind of structure?
Well, we have a registration. So yep. people can register in that. What that does is that allows them to tell us what sports they like. It also tells us that they want more information on what camps and everything else that's coming up. So when we send out a monthly newsletter, it goes out to that those communities, and everybody gets that. So we call them Soldier On. Anybody that's accessed the program, we call them Soldier On, members of Soldier On.
Sure.
So that's part of it. So anybody that's really benefited from it or has an interest would be a kind of a Soldier On member mm-hmm. of Soldier On, a participant in Soldier On. But there's lots more out there. There's from Veteran Affairs, there's about 40,000 under the age of 60 that could access Soldier On in any minute.
Wow.
Yeah, there's lots of ill and injured members. And wow. You gave a number of
615. That was just what I found, and that was just in that particular area where you were.
Right, and that's going to be, and you're going to see, especially with mental health injuries, that it comes out later.
Yes.
In life, right? It could be 10 years, 20 years. So that number I find was low, and I think that's that.
Well, I think that this may have also just been physical injuries as opposed to...
It would have to be.
Yeah, I would think so as well.
I would think so too, yeah. Because Soldier On's helped over 2,200. Now, those aren't all service-related. It doesn't matter. It's just what they got injured or ill while serving.
That's amazing. Could be 2,200.
2,200, and that's...
And growing.
That's from April last year, so it's growing even more.
Wow.
We'll count again this April.
So I want three adjectives that for you... describe Soldier On.
Motivating, inspiring, I gotta think of a good adjective to what I'm trying to say. Inspiring, motivating. I'm trying to say that esprit to capture that.
Do you know the word I came up with in my head? Welcoming.
Welcoming.
You can have it.
I will use it. Supporting or welcoming, yes.
Yeah, that's what I... Because I have the image in my mind is of arms out.
Yes.
Bringing people in.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so, and
I'm going to steal that.
You can. Consider my gift to you. Happy birthday. My last question is, you have three children.
I do.
I want you to give me a statement that you would give to your children about being Canadian.
I would say always be proud of where you grew up and who you are and the people around you.
Do you know what? From one proud Canadian to another, Jay Faco, thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Invictus Games Radio. For For more information, visit www.invictusgames2017.com.